Mark Brewer as former chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. Jeff Timmer as former executive director of the Michigan Republicans. And this is a Republic, if you can keep it, with Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer.
We begin with a look at the latest political news, and there's a lot happening as we record this on Tuesday afternoon. There's a lot happening both in Michigan and Lansing and in Washington dealing with voting rights and a whole lot of other political issues. Mark, why don't you share some of your thoughts?
Sure. Well, just today, two big developments on the ballot proposal front here in Michigan. As many of our listeners know, I'm one of the lawyers for Keep Michigan Safe, which opposes the Unlock Michigan petition drive to repeal the emergency powers of the governor. We had an adverse decision from the Michigan Supreme Court about 10 days ago. We asked the court to rehear that decision today. And I think as a consequence, the Board of Canvassers canceled its meeting for tomorrow, to which they were scheduled to certify that petition and send it to the legislature, where both Shirky and Wentworth had promised to immediately enact it. So we'll see how this plays out. But the other big petition development today, Unlock Michigan had promised a few days ago, a week or so ago, that they were going to do another petition drive, this time to repeal the portions of the public health code, which the governor has been relying upon ever since the Michigan Supreme Court found the Emergency Powers of the Governor's Act unconstitutional last fall. And that language, the proposed language of that petition, got filed with the state today. And so now we're going to see, I'm sure, a battle over the summary, the petition form, and then on the streets if they go forward with this and attempt to collect signatures. This is incredibly short-sighted. The pandemic powers that the governor had under the Emergency Powers of the Governor's Act dated to 1945, used by Democratic and Republican governors, passed by a Republican legislature in 45, signed by a Republican governor. And the overreaction to the governor's moves by having that law declared unconstitutional, now trying to repeal it, it's been bad enough. But now Unlock Michigan wants to take away the only remaining emergency powers of the governor to control pandemics. And again, this is going to apply to every governor going forward. We are not through with pandemics, you know, in this kind of interconnected world, and we're going to see more of this. And this is incredibly short-sighted public policy being done from what I can tell, is only partisan reasons. It's a way they think to get back at Governor Whitmer for the way she's governed the state in the last year and a half.
There's no question from my point of view that the Republicans are reacting emotionally and knee-jerk in an exceedingly partisan way to regardless of the benefits to, in this case, public health, or switching gears to voting laws. You know, I still contend that the increase in turnout in 2018, 2020 helped Republicans down ballot, especially in 2020. Yet, because Trump lost, they're focused only on the top of the ticket race, ignoring the advantage that high turnout in some areas gave them, that helped them keep their majorities on several county commissions, in the state house. Yet that, you know, that logic, that looking at the evidence, hasn't stopped them from rushing headlong to change voting laws to make it harder for people to vote, to make it harder for Republicans as well as Democrats to vote by absentee. The Republicans in my 30 years in this business have relied on a strong base of absentee voters. They're making it harder for their own voters to vote absentee. And now we're seeing teetering toward an Arizona-style circus where the Sheboygan County, little Sheboygan County up in northern Michigan, their board of commissioners has voted to proceed with an audit like they're doing. I say that audit with quotation marks around it because it really is just a sham done by partisans. And you have the state Senate majority leader indicating he may be willing to look at an Arizona-style circus to relitigate the clear outcome an outcome he admits, yet is still willing to perhaps go through with the theater to appease the MAGA mob. And today you had an obscure freshman legislator, Republican from Southwest Michigan, introduce a legislation. It's not going to end up going anywhere because the governor would veto it because she's smart. But to require a random 10% precinct audit, to a random 10% selection of precincts in each of the 83 counties, and just so happened to require a 20% audit of the city of Detroit. And so this is just part of the anybody saying we need to put the last election behind us. Just look at the news every day and look at the Republicans and their continuing assault on the outcome of that election. Is we can't put it behind us because they're trying to change those results.
I know you're absolutely right, Jeff. And I know there's an effort going on in Houghton County as well in terms of a local audit. And to his credit, I will give him credit. Senator McBroom went up there in a county commission meeting and said, you know, whatever Mike Lindell is saying is just baseless. It's conjecture. And you shouldn't go down this path. You know, that may generate a primary opponent for him come next year. But we're seeing this, and I worry that, you know, the fact that Sheboygan's going down this path, Houghton's looking at it, that this could spread, right? It could trigger other counties that want to do this. Complete waste of time. Matter of fact, beyond that, a number of the attorneys who are being threatened with sanctions for their misconduct last fall are involved in some of this. This Stephanie Lambert has been very visible up in Sheboygan, promising them funding and, you know, resources in order to pull off this audit. So folks like her continue to stir the pot behind all of this. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't know if our listeners know, on July 6th, there's going to be a hearing in federal court in Detroit on a motion for sanctions against Sidney Powell and a number of these other attorneys who brought that frivolous lawsuit in Detroit in federal court trying to overturn the election results. So maybe from that perspective, there'll be a little bit of accountability. But unfortunately, as you said, Jeff, this has spread so broadly throughout the state, people just want to relitigate the election results. I mean, we had that rally at the Capitol where they delivered these, quote, affidavits, you know, to the Senate Majority Leader demanding, you know, this Arizona style, I'm not even going to use the A word, I'm going to call it a circus, be brought here to Michigan.
That makes me think of the F word.
Well, I'll stick with circus.
I meant fraud.
Fraud, gotcha. You know, and again, I would hope and I think that, you know, should the legislature here in Michigan attempt to go down that path, I think there's going to be a much bigger fight over whether that occurs than we saw in Arizona in terms of who has control of those ballots and the integrity issues. It raises questions of federal law, which the Department of Justice has been raising regarding Arizona. And I really appreciate the way our election officials, state and local, have been standing up against these efforts. I mean, not a day goes by when the Secretary of State is not out there saying, this is the big lie, this is misinformation. She's been terrific about this. But unfortunately, we're all going to have to continue to put a lot more time and energy to fighting this off.
The professional election clerks who are elected, but they're professional clerks around the state, most of whom are Republican. We've had clerks in Midland County, in Antrim County, in Ottawa County. Republicans all stand up for the integrity of the election, for facts, for truth, despite risk to their future electoral prospects, because they won't go along with the crazy bullshit that the Republicans are spreading as a concerted, deliberate effort to undermine faith in the integrity of the election.
I'll just add on that point, Jeff. I mean, look, I've been practicing election law in Michigan since the 80s. All over the state, done all kinds of recounts, elections, and so forth. And I agree with you that by and large, and you know, to a great degree, clerks of both parties, county and even down to the local level, treat their job very seriously. They're very professional. In my experience, the bad actors fall in both parties. I've seen that. You know, I wouldn't sit here today and say all the Democratic clerks are perfect. They're not. But by and large, we've been very well served in this state by our elected partisan clerks, and we need to stand behind them and support them as they try to fight off this disinformation effort.
Time for a quick break. When we come back, Mark and I are joined by Hugh McNichol from Rank My Vote.
Jeff and Mark will be back after these messages.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with decades of experience measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, federal, state, and local issues. Our clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, state agencies, and local governments across the state. When it comes to measuring voter opinions, Epic MRA has been known as the go-to Michigan pollster for over 25 years. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
The Michigan Polycast. It's been called one of Michigan's top political podcasts by Hourly Detroit.
Each week, longtime political junkies Christine Barry and Walt Sorg offer news and views on Michigan politics and policy, as well as national issues impacting our pleasant peninsulas. And they are joined by some of the state's biggest names from government, politics, academia, and nonprofit groups, with an in-depth look at those issues.
Subscribe now to the Michigan Polycast, online at www.michiganpolycast.com.
Today's mayoral election in New York City is the most visible demonstration to date of ranked choice voting, also known as instant runoff elections. I might add, I have a friend running for city council in New York, and I'm eager to talk to her about her experience with ranked choice voting after the primary today. Ranked choice voting is also known as instant runoff elections. It's used statewide in both Maine and Alaska. In the latter case, RCV could well protect moderate Republican Lisa Murkowski from falling victim to an electoral assault based on Donald Trump's vindictiveness against her for refusing to toe the party line.
A grassroots group has been working quietly in Michigan for months to expand the voting reforms in our state. One of the leaders of the ranked choice voting grassroots movement in Michigan is Hugh McNichol IV. He's an auto repair shop owner by day who's been helping build a statewide effort as a leader in the grassroots group Rank My Vote. Hugh, thanks for taking time to be part of a republic, if you can keep it.
So, Hugh, why don't we start with an explanation from you as to how ranked choice voting differs from the system that we're used to here in Michigan right now.
Sure. So in the current system, voters are forced to choose or decide who is a viable candidate, and then they have to, what's called, pick between the lesser of the two evils a lot of times I hear. And ranked choice voting completely changes that dynamic. It allows voters to express their preferences, rank the candidates in the order of their preference. And then after the voters submit their ranked ballots, an instant runoff is performed. So it's just like a regular runoff election, except that instead of knowing everybody's preferences, we don't need everybody to come back. We don't need to waste time, money, or resources on additional elections.
So lots of questions that I know Jeff and I have and our listeners do as well. So thank you for educating us here today. So let me just start by saying, is this a system that is intended to be used in primaries, general elections, both? Are there differences?
Yeah, it can be used in both, depending on the jurisdiction.
And you know, what is the pattern around the country in terms of that? Do we see it in general elections or primary elections? Is there a trend one way or the other?
Other than Cambridge, Massachusetts, which has been using ranked choice voting since the 1940s, the real precedent for ranked choice voting was southern states, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana. They allowed ranked choice voting for military overseas voters because they have runoff elections down there, traditional runoff elections, and those elections are typically held about a month after the general election. A lot of times, that's not enough time to mail new ballots out to the military overseas voters and then to fill them out and mail them back. So they were solving that problem with voting. They send out a ranked ballot with all the candidates to all the military overseas voters. They get to rank all of the candidates in order of their preference. Those ballots are returned, hopefully in time for the primary, but if not, those ballots can still be counted for the general. But in the general election, when those same ballots are counted, if the voters' top choice is eliminated, they go to the next highest ranked candidate, and that's who gets their vote.
I know this isn't your motivation, but when you mentioned the southern states and in the history of runoff elections there, where candidates in either primaries or general elections are required to get 50% of the vote, there's a good deal of racism baked into that system in the South. You know, it was set up originally by white majorities in the South trying to make sure that black candidates couldn't get across the finish line because it was harder for them to get 50%. And so I know that's not the intent here, but could that criticism be made of ranked choice voting as a, if it's applied elsewhere? I mean, that's, I guess, how would we respond? How would you respond to that?
There's two responses that I would have to that. The first response that I'll just get out of the way first is that the Department of Justice has actually used ranked choice voting to settle voting rights disputes or lawsuits. Even in the state of Michigan, that East Point, Michigan was actually the first city where that was happening, as far as I'm aware of. The as far as to address the reason for that, you get these low turnout elections where only the in crowd votes. In the South states, it was white people and it disenfranchised a lot of people. Whereas ranked choice voting, I prefer to have a ranked choice voting election on the big turnout election day. So I advocate for a single ranked choice voting election in November, where people show up the most. When you do that, you provide the most enfranchisement, because that's when the most people show up and you allow everybody to express their preferences for all of the candidates, not just to the two candidates that were decided on by the elite that we call primaries. The effect of a primary in a general election is very similar to a general election and a runoff election. The only difference is that the runoff elections are typically held as the low turnout elector, whereas the primary elections are typically the pre-election. We're picking the nominees for you to choose.
Fascinating.
How do you deal with, and there's just a lot of questions, and this is great. How do you deal with write-in candidates? You could still have write-in candidates, I assume, under this scenario, right? So that,
correct.
So there's no restriction on that. And then what do these ballots look like? Are they basically a name listed? And then, you know, if there's up to five choices, you fill in an oval, whether, you know, Brewer is your first choice or your fifth choice. Is that how it works, Hugh?
So there's a few different ranked choice voting ballot formats depending on the vendor. The one that I like to use is the grid style that has all the candidates listed, and then it has vertical columns for first choice, second choice, third choice, fourth choice, and so on. And you fill in the bubble of first choice next to your favorite candidate and second choice for your second favorite, and so on. Minneapolis uses columns. So they'll have like a first choice column with all the candidates listed, and then they'll have a second choice column with all the candidates listed again. It takes up a lot more ballot space. Places that use that tend to not allow their voters to rank as many candidates as a grid style, because it's harder to fit it on a ballot. So that's another reason that I advocate for the grid
style. Yeah, I mean, we, as you know, we have really long ballots here in Michigan, particularly in even year general elections. So you would fill in, and I assume then these ballots are machine readable, right? It's just a matter of setting up the software properly to tabulate the choices. And then do the machines, you know, they contain an algorithm, a formula for automatically doing the calculations that are necessary. If the person who gets the most number one votes doesn't reach a majority, then the machine recalculates, the software recalculates. Is that the way it's set up?
So there are software versions available for at least some of the vendors that will do that. But currently, as far as I know, in Michigan, our software is set up to tabulate a ranked choice voting election and export what's called a cast vote record. And that basically says, without giving any voter information away, how many first choice, second choice, third choices for each person and so on. Like, it has everybody's ballot contained. And there's this something called the Universal RCV Tabulator that was approved by our Bureau of Elections specifically for the use for East Point's elections, that DOJ lawsuit settlement I was telling you about. But explicitly for that, they didn't approve it for any others. And that's kind of creating some problems as far as like my advocacy is going. That Universal Tabulator can take those cast vote records from all three different vendors, if necessary. It doesn't matter if they're different vendors, and will shoot out a round by round results. And the winner of the final round is guaranteed to have over 50% of the remaining vote, and that person is deemed the winner.
I think this sounds fascinating, because I'm picturing that MyPillow guy, and hearing you describe, you know, the way this would be, it would make his head explode. And so that to me makes it sound like something worthwhile if it's going to drive a whack job like that crazy. But going what you just said there, you said 50% of the remaining vote. Does that, would it be 50% of the votes cast, or 50% of those who kind of, who finish their second and third or fourth choice, whatever right. it is? Is that how right. it works? And does that present any kind of either legal or constitutional hurdles if people don't complete the ballot all the way to the fourth or fifth or sixth choice, whatever it is?
When I said 50%, guaranteed to have 50% of the remaining vote, I intentionally used the word remaining because it is deceptive to say that those people are always going to have 50% of the original vote cast. And here's the reason for that. There's a couple of reasons for that. The main reason is because, especially at the beginning of ranked choice voting, they didn't allow voters to rank all of the candidates. Like San Francisco was one of the first cities to adopt it in the early 2000s. And they originally only allowed voters to rank three candidates. So if there was in California, they have a lot of candidates running already. If you're only ranking three and those three are eliminated, now all of a sudden your vote isn't going to anybody. And you weren't able to express your preferences beyond that third. I think that's a little disenfranchising. When you have a runoff system, you should be allowed to rank as many candidates as are on the ballot. That's my opinion. The other concern about not getting 50% of the original vote, as long as voters are allowed to rank all of the candidates on the ballot, the only time when the winner will not have more than 50% of the vote is when voters chose not to rank all of the candidates. And when voters choose not to rank all of the candidates, that's different than not being allowed to rank all the candidates. When voters choose not to rank all of the candidates, that's the same as them not showing up for a runoff election because they don't care who would win between the two.
Well, yeah, that makes logical sense then. Yeah, because, you know, if I show up and Mark Brewer's name is on the ballot, that's the only candidate I'd want to choose, and I wouldn't want to bother ranking anybody else. But if Mark's not running in that particular race, then I might want to, you know, rank, you know, only two. But it's my choice then, it's my preference not to rank any of the others. You're right. That's by omission, you're expressing your choice, as opposed to not being allowed to make that choice. There's a distinction there that might seem nuanced to some, but it seems real clear to me.
In Michigan, again, we have a long ballot, but this happens everywhere. And you get what's called, you know, ballot fatigue, right? Drop off, roll off, you know, whatever you want to call it, that as people work their way down the ballot, they vote less and less. They know less about the candidates or whatever it may be. Do you have the same phenomenon if you're, say there's nine candidates, and you can rank them one through nine. Do you see in places where this has been tried that there is fatigue by the voters? And even if they can rank nine, they don't all rank nine.
They don't always rank all of the candidates on the ballot. And you can actually see that there are less people that rank five than people that rank four, and less people that rank four than people that rank three, and so on. But I heard a statistic from I think it was one of the New Mexico races, but I hear statistics like this a lot where like 90% of the voters cast a vote for one of the two final candidates. So that's basically like 90% of the people that showed up to the big turnout election also were involved in the runoff election. And think about how many people that's enfranchising.
You know, from what little I know about ranked choice voting, it seems to be used now mostly around the country in nonpartisan races. Is there a reason for that? Was it easier for reformers like you to get this done at a local level in a nonpartisan race in Michigan? Virtually all of our cities are nonpartisan races. Why is it that we're seeing this mostly in nonpartisan races so far?
In Michigan, Michigan has something called the Home Rule Act, which allows cities to determine the way they run their elections, among other things. And a lot of states actually have this. So in these states where you see ranked choice voting, them using ranked choice voting, I think all of them are home rule states. So these were people that lived in those cities that decided they saw a better way of doing things. And they said, hey, I want to do this better way of doing things. And they went through the motions and got signatures and put it on the ballot and then had an election and those voters approved it. And now it's in their charter. And then sometimes they also had to jump through loopholes or hurdles, I should say, about actually getting it implemented. That happens too sometimes, but they do that work, and usually they get it implemented, and some still haven't, but they're still working on it as well. So,
and so here in Michigan, then, and I know you're not a lawyer, I'm not asking to be a lawyer, but apparently the interpretation of the Home Rule Cities Act is that a home rule city could do this, and they don't need the permission of the state. But it sounds like you indicated earlier, the state still tightly regulates the scanning machines, you know, the tabulators. And so you need to work with the state to make sure that the software and the tabulators are compatible with this if your city chooses to do this. Is that the way it works?
So the software and tabulators are already compatible. As of 2017, we got new voting equipment throughout the entire state. And between our 83 counties, I believe, we picked three different vendors. Each county picked their own. And all three of those vendors are RCV compatible. Uh-huh. They can print RCV ballots. They can read RCV ballots. No problem.
So it's just a matter of turning on the function, basically, in the software.
Correct.
Okay.
I assume, you know, you're part of a Michigan effort, but I assume is there some kind of national group that you're working with or part of, or is this something that you're kind of doing more as a free agent focused here on Michigan?
Well, I'm a free agent. I'm working for myself on a volunteer. I don't get paid to do this. And as far as Michigan goes, I'll say that there's two factions for ranked choice voting, two pro ranked choice voting factions. The one that I'm in is ranked choice vote or rank by vote. And we advocate exclusively for ranked choice voting and nothing else. There's another group that advocates for ranked choice voting along with open primaries. There's a person named Catherine Gale from Wisconsin that wrote a book, I believe, called The Politics Industry. And a lot of people read it and it makes sense to them. They support ranked choice voting and nonpartisan primaries, and they wanted to see them both happen at the same time. So that's that second group. And we don't have any bad blood between us. We get along just fine.
So there's no, like, you know, hostility and warfare and sabotage.
No, I hope not. Not us towards them.
You know, and all of us here are all organizers, you know, each in our own way. I just want to ask an organizing question. I have a lot of friends who are active in the marijuana reform effort here in Michigan, right? And they started at the local level. I actually helped some of them get on the ballot, you know, to get decriminalization ordinances passed in their local cities. And they, you know, in retrospect, you can see it now, but they're very smart. They start at the local level, they built support, and it, you know, culminated in what we now have in this state, not in terms of medical marijuana, but also recreational. So if I can ask you, is there a plan in Michigan by activists like you to systematically get ranked choice voting adopted locally and then push it to the state level? Is that the strategy?
I think that's kind of the difference between the two ranked choice voting factions, is that we at Rank My Vote think that the way to get it done is by getting local cities to adopt it first. That's what happened in Maine. In the state of Maine, their capital, well, not their capital, but the city of Portland, I believe it's their biggest city or their second biggest city, adopted it in 2010. They used it for the first time in 2011. People liked it. They collected signatures for it in 2015 and got it on the ballot in 2016, and they got approved. And then the people that were empowered were trying to block it. And then they got it approved again in 2018. And then they finally used it in 2000 or 2020. So, and other places they voted to expand it in 2020 when they got to use it again. So I think that all signs in Maine point to yes. In other places that have, saw growth in ranked choice voting, where it looks like it's going to go statewide next. They started at city level. They got gained. One city passed it, and then a neighboring city or another city in that state saw that and liked it, and then they passed it. And so it kind of snowballs, and they roll off that.
But you just said there's another approach. Is that the other group? Are they doing it more of a top-down?
Yeah,
strategy?
The other group is So the other group that advocates for ranked choice voting along with nonpartisan primaries, they call it a final five or a final four. But basically, they have their nonpartisan primary and they either select the top four or the top five, depending on which they go with. And those five will run in the general election. That was what was proposed in Catherine Gale's book. And that was what was passed in Alaska.
Okay, so there is an example of that system working in another state.
Correct. Alaska didn't have any cities that had implemented right. ranked choice voting before that had passed. But they had, there was a previous measure to pass it statewide. John McCain had actually called Alaska voters and tried to get them to support it. But it had failed a long time ago. This was probably 20 years ago.
And that's the good thing about Alaska is you can actually call every voter in the state.
Well, a lot of them are located in one media market. So let me ask this, and you know, and this is no secret to our listeners, certainly not to, not to Jeff. I'm a big fan of straight party voting. I think it's been an important institution here in Michigan. It's very popular with both sides of the aisle here in Michigan. It's particularly popular with minority voters. Matter of fact, we went to court to defend the right of minority voters to use it a few years ago. How does ranked choice voting work in a straight party voting system? Can it?
Sure. Yes, it can. So just like in our current system where you're allowed to vote straight party, but then also vote for the candidate. And depending on if that, as long as you voted for a valid candidate, then the vote goes to the valid candidate. If you voted for an invalid candidate, your vote actually is transferred to the straight party vote, right? That's the way our current rule is. And so basically ranked choice voting is the same thing, is you rank the candidates. If you don't have a candidate ranked anymore, if you only decided to rank one candidate and that candidate is no longer, didn't make the top two, and that candidate is removed. If you have a ranking, or if you had a straight choice bubble for the Democratic Party, let's say, then your vote is going to go for whoever the Democratic candidate is in that race. Now, with the final four or final five, that wouldn't happen because the partisan stuff would go away. This would just be under just strictly ranked choice voting.
Right, so the final five, one of the important pieces of that is it's a nonpartisan primary, right? Is that what you're saying? Got
yes.
it. Got it. Well, you don't use straight party voting in the primary, but then on the in the ballot in the fall, there no party indication whatsoever.
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that. I shouldn't answer that.
Yeah, because I'm just trying to conceptually figure out whether straight party voting is compatible with the system.
So I'm not sure if it's compatible with the final four or final five. I can tell you that it is compatible with just ranked
choice voting. RCV, right.
If you choose only that straight party Democratic or straight party Republican, for instance, that would be expressing your choice. If you choose not to rank anybody else, that's a choice that you make. So that it would seem to me logically to follow, I guess, what we were saying, you know, a few minutes ago, about the expressing your choice versus not being allowed to present that choice. By allowing that straight party preference to still be expressed, it would be less of a change from what we have now, where if people choose that's the only choice they want, I want to vote for the, you know, the true blue Democrat, and that's it, that's their choice.
And so you would go there, if I could pursue this, you would go through and you vote straight Republican, straight Democrat, straight Green, straight Libertarian, I mean, whatever straight party. And as long as that candidate is still in the mix, that vote would count for that candidate. But you could still then rank somebody else number two and number three and number four. Yes. And that way, if your preferred party candidate, you know, fails to make it to the next round of counting, then your backup votes would kick in. Huh. Very interesting. Right. Got it.
Or, Mark, if you chose not to vote for a second or a third or a fourth choice in any particular race, that's where I was saying that you're expressing your opinion to only vote for the Democrat in that. So it would seem compatible, you know, with because right now you can choose. I've walked into the voting booth and, because of my role, knowing oftentimes candidates, you know, and especially in local races, I know all of them and I think they're all jerks. I don't want to vote for them. So I've left spots blank before. Right. That's a choice. Right.
Yeah. So I can see. Yeah.
I was involved with some drafting of constitutional amendment language for the state of Michigan. And we specifically wrote language in there that keeps straight ticket voting and talks about how voters are allowed to rank all their candidates, but if their rankings are exhausted and they decided to vote straight ticket, then their vote goes to that party's nominee that's still
right. I mean, it is in the Constitution here now in Michigan, and so you'd have to do something that was compatible. That sounds like you thought this through in terms of how that would work. Okay.
I guess we're nearing the end of our time, but we still have a little bit left. You know, where does this go from here? What happens in 2022 or, you know, the rest of this year? What happens before the next presidential election from your point of view, if it all goes according to the way you see it unfolding?
Thanks for asking. So in 2021, we're hoping to have two cities put ranked choice voting on the ballot for local adoption. Ann Arbor almost had it on the ballot last year. They actually tried to put it on the ballot, tied it with getting rid of their partisan primaries. They're one of only three cities in the state that still use partisan primary elections. That didn't pass because of the partisan primaries. So now they, those people that objected are actually gone. The partisan primaries, I believe, thing that discussion is, has gone away now. And so we fully expect them to put ranked choice voting back on the ballot for this November election. In Lansing, where I live, I've been talking to city council for probably about 4 or 5 years and people around in the city of Lansing. And we've got charter amendment language drafted that had been reviewed by the city attorney's office and then was proposed by a city council member, and it was sent to committee and we had hearings on it, and it was sent out of committee and it was actually transferred out of one committee and into the committee of the whole, which is the committee with the entire council body. And the council body has a couple, I think I'll call it good governance, because I think they took out some ambiguous or possibly confusing language and we're replacing it with, we're eliminating the confusing sentence, and we're probably making it a little
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but in those two cities, it's being done by the city council, not by petition. Is that right?
That is correct. That's correct. And that's a little bit unorthodox, because generally it's petitions collected by citizens. And I think one of the reasons why we're going this different route, well, one of them is because we have the votes on each council and we want to save ourselves the time and money. But I think COVID is another reason. Like, we're a little leery about going out and collecting signatures during a pandemic. And if we have the votes on council, why?
In my experience, amending charters or even enacting ordinances usually requires a small number of signatures. It usually doesn't take very many. Do you plan, now that COVID hopefully is behind us, are you planning petition drives going forward?
No, we still intend on the city council putting this on the ballot for us. They sent the language, that our current charter amendment language, to the attorney general's office. A little proactive. They could have passed it, and then the next place it would have gone would be the attorney general's office. They're kind of giving it to her in advance. Hopefully we have enough time to get this thing up for a vote, and it should be fast-tracked once it goes through, because we already kind of had her look it over. That's the hope. Time will tell.
Right, I may have confused you. Do you intend to do petition drives in other cities? If you can tell me, and if you can't talk about your strategy, I understand.
No, I'm happy to talk about the strategy, but I'm only involved in the city of Lansing, so I can tell you about what our strategy is. I'm on meetings with people from across the state, so I know that people in Kalamazoo have talked about collecting signatures. I know people in Traverse City have talked about collecting signatures, and people in Sault Ste. Marie have talked about collecting signatures, and there's actually a lot of cities that have talked about collecting signatures, but our advice to them is to make sure that you have the volunteers to collect enough signatures and get it on the ballot, and hopefully enough volunteers.
I mean, again, a great model for them is what the marijuana reform advocates did, because, again, in many of these cities, sometimes it's a couple hundred signatures in order to get something on the ballot. It's not difficult as long as you've got the dedicated volunteers.
That's good to know. Our number in Lansing, we did the research back when we thought we were going to be collecting signatures, and we need about 4,400 valid. And so we were assuming we needed about 6,000 at least to give us a little bit of a cushion.
Well, thank you, Hugh McNichol, for enlightening us on ranked choice voting. This has been very fascinating to learn about this, given us a lot to think about. And one of the things that I'm curious about is trying to put on my old Republican Party lens and try to look at how people of both major parties would view this, how they would view it as an advantage to them or a disadvantage, because that will have a lot to do with how this would play out at the state level. And so I know the knee-jerk reaction, what they're likely to be, but I wonder if they actually think deeply about it and examine facts rather than rhetoric, conclusions they'll come to. That'll be fascinating as this unfolds.
I'll be more blunt than Jeff. I think if you tell people that this is being done in Democratic enclaves like Lansing, Ann Arbor, East Point, Republicans are going to say, no way.
Alaska, Utah,
there you
Virginia.
Go. That's exactly the counter. That's right, you.
Military overseas states are all red states.
Yep.
Well, and you know, as I've watched the Republicans over the last few years, they will cut off their nose to spite their face. They'll ignore evidence, like they, you know, they're doing it right now with trying to limit voting freedoms. When you can, I think, make a very clear argument that increased turnout in 2020 helped Republicans down ballot.
Well, and Jeff, you know, we've talked about this from week to week. Is this not a mechanism, perhaps, that some moderate candidates might be able to win Republican primaries?
That's my pitch to the parties, is really like this type of system creates moderate winners, bridge builders, people that can come to consensuses. And I really encourage both the Democratic and the Republican Party to use this within your party primaries. There's no risk of it helping the other side. You're just guaranteed to help yourself. It's a win-win.
If it makes sense, it means it's probably not likely to happen among most politicians.
I want to join Jeff in thanking you, Hugh. This has been very, very enlightening. Really enjoyed the conversation. Good luck to you in your efforts. I'll have to think about whether I support this, but you've made a good case for it today.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Jeff.
That's going to be the last word for the week. Our great thanks to Hugh McNichol for joining the conversation.
And if you've got something to say to us, take a few minutes to drop us a note. comments@arepublicpodcast.com. Or you can add your comments on our Facebook page.
If the Republic is still standing, we'll be back next week. I'm Jeff Timmer.
And I'm Mark Brewer. Thanks very much for listening.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It, wherever you get your podcasts, or on our website, arepublicpodcast.com. A Republic If You Can Keep It, with Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer, as a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.